It's live, expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glink is on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Hey, welcome back to the Elise Glink Show. We're live on Sundays, 11 to 1 here on News Talk WSB. But today, we're doing something a little bit different. I'm actually broadcasting to you from the penthouse at the Hutton Hotel in Nashville, Tennessee. And I'm here because we are doing a panel on economics, credit, and real estate. We wanted to do a mid-year briefing. It's the middle of the year. We thought, you know, let's do something that will be really interesting and keep you informed. Because as you move forward with your plans for buying real estate or trying to unload a foreclosure or a short sale this year, you need to know how it all fits together. So I've invited some of my favorite people to sit in with us today for a few minutes and share their perspective on where the economy is going and how you can make the most of it. So let's dig in. Don't forget, you can always join me online, Twitter, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K, the ThinkLink community. We're big and broad. You can find out everything just by going to thinklink.com, signing up for our free weekly newsletter on the homepage. That is your roadmap to everything Glink. Steve Ely, who has been a guest several times on the show, is the CEO of eCredible. They are a credit reporting agency based in Alpharetta. And what's interesting about eCredible, as I've said so many times on the show, is that eCredible looks at the credit effect of what you buy, not what you borrow, right? This is a company where if you don't have credit, let's say you don't have a FICO score, there are millions and millions of consumers in America who don't have a FICO score. If you go to annualcreditreport.com and you put in your social security number and nothing comes back, it's because you have a very thin credit file or you just don't have one. And that's where a company like eCredible comes into play. So Steve, I've asked him to join us to sort of set the table, talk a little bit about credit as we hit the mid-year. Steve, welcome back to the Elise Glink Show.
Thanks, Elise. It's nice to be here.
Well, it's nice to have you as well. So you heard me give the introduction. I think there are a lot of people who continue to be so confused about credit. The new numbers that were out this week from Equifax show that the amount of credit Americans are borrowing is down. But we know that there's a lot of money that people would like to borrow, but they don't just qualify for it. So as you look out from your seat, and you've been all over the country working with different kinds of credit companies, what are you seeing right now?
So there's a broad spectrum of things going on today. I think one of the things that has changed in some segments of the marketplace is a lot of lenders are looking for more consumers to lend money to. It's not that there's a lack of money from a creditor or a lender perspective. There are plenty of funds available. But what they struggle with is how do they qualify people that they can't see in the credit file. So, for example, as you mentioned earlier, if they try to look for you in Equifax and look in that data and try to find you there and they can't find you there, they just don't know what to do. But yet you, on the surface, look like you might be somebody they'd like to have as a customer. And so I think they do struggle with that. And what's been going on in the last quarter that you'll see in all this data is that some of the lending standards have loosened a little bit. And that's mainly for things like car loans and credit cards. Standards that have not loosened are things around mortgages. Those are still pretty difficult to do.
Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit later with Doug Walker of Churchill Mortgage about what he's seeing sort of in the mortgage space. When I look out and I see what people are borrowing money for and what they're trying to do, one thing that you brought up that I have seen as well is now that interest rates are at these historic low rates, and I think this is, what, the fourth or fifth week in a row that we hit some sort of record low with long-term interest rates, people are trying to take those car loans and refinance them, something that has never traditionally been that easy to do.
Yeah, it's a new phenomenon in the marketplace. Everybody knows about refining home mortgages. We've been doing that for years and years and years now. But now there's a lot of lenders out there trying to refinance your car loan. And so if a couple of years ago you went out and got a car loan at 8 or 9 or 10%, you can probably find somebody willing to refinance that at 5 or 6%. And while the rate doesn't sound like much, it could mean a $30 or $40, $50 difference in the payment you're making every month on your car. So you need to look at that. And there are plenty of opportunities out there for you to go look at various websites from major lenders. People like roadloans.com, for example, that are more than willing to refinance your car loan at a lower rate.
It's really interesting, this whole idea of, oh, well, you'll only save maybe $30, $40, $50 a month. I'm hearing from people listen to the show every single week. $50 a month can be life-changing for them. I don't think, I listen to the politicians and I listen to the economists, and things are slowly getting better. Meanwhile, the Fed this week said they're very seriously considering another round of quantitative easing because they don't see anything much happening. But for so many people in America, this has just been a horrible 5 to 7 year period, and they're so damaged that $50 a month could literally save lives.
Absolutely, and I think that's why people need to look at this very seriously. I think you do a great job of giving people all kinds of tips on ways they can cut corners and save money, and you know, save $2,000 a year by doing, you know, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Well, here's something new that I don't think you have been talking about that a consumer should take a very hard look at, because $50 a month is $600 a year, and that's enough to make a difference in a lot of people's lives.
Now, I know one of your partners with Ecredible is a company that's out there looking for homeowners who are facing foreclosure, deeply underwater in their properties. They're trying to figure out what to do. Tell us about those kinds of opportunities, because, you know, we've seen the LA Times, the Wall Street Journal has profiled a number of these, basically they're financial companies that are now stepping in and trying to buy 1,000 homes at a time from Fannie, Freddie, or HUD.
Yeah, this is a company called American Equity Foundation, and they are a nonprofit that's trying to find consumers who do have underwater mortgages, and yet they want to stay in their home. There are roughly 17 million people that fit that profile around the United States.
17 million.
Yeah, it's a lot of people.
Jeez.
And so it's a lot of people that are frankly scared, frightened. They don't know what they're going to do. A lot of these people have quit paying their mortgage because they just think, wow, you know, my home used to be worth $500,000. Now it's worth $300,000. I'm never going to get above water again. Why should I continue to stay here? Well, American Equity Foundation has a phenomenal program which they seek that consumer out. They actually buy the mortgage from the note holder at a discount so they can afford to get it at a discount. They leave the consumer in the home. They put them in a lease purchase program at a very affordable rate so that now they can stay in the home. They enroll them in Ecredible, which is our product, which allows them to basically manage their financial life and prove that they are paying their bills on time, because that's a key aspect of American Equity Foundation, understanding, are you going to continue to pay your lease on time? Do they want to give you a mortgage 12, 18, 24 months from now when you appear to be back on your feet again? That's going to be the barometer they're going to use, because they know that your FICO score is messed up, so that they can't use that. If they were to use that, they would never give you a mortgage. And so they're going to use Ecredible to help them understand that. But what's really powerful about that for the consumer, they get to stay in their home, they get on a lease purchase program, and 12, 18, 24 months down the road, to be able to buy the home back at a current market valuation with a current competitive mortgage rate.
I got to think there are so many people listening to the show this morning who are thinking, I'm in that position. Where do I call for that company? I want them to do that for me.
Yeah, it's their website is AEF, the number 4, org.org. And so it's a fantastic organization. We really love what these guys are doing. And I think they're in a position to help an awful lot of people.
All right. So if you're interested, AEF, like Frank, number 4, dot O-R-G, for the American Equity Foundation, 4.org. And we'll try and put that up on the blog or tweet it out a little bit later on the show as well. Steve, when you look out over some new things that you know are popping up in credit today, you know, how effective do you think the CFPB, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, you know, now, what is it, a year that it's been around, more or less?
Officially a year.
Happy birthday, CFPB.
Right.
You know, how effective are they? You know, they're now starting to undertake a new look at mortgage rules. Do you think they're effective when it comes to credit? Are they helping consumers?
Well, they're certainly creating awareness amongst consumers, but they have a long ways to go before they become a household name. You know, everyone knows who the FTC is, they know who the IRS is, but they don't know who the CFPB is just yet. And so I think they're doing a pretty good job on the PR front, trying to create awareness to consumers, for consumers to come to them and give them insight and solicit help from the CFPB. I think one of the short-term impacts they have had is in improving the information around what's on a credit card statement to make that more transparent to a consumer, and there have been credit card companies now that have signed up to use that to make that more clear to consumers. That's a positive thing.
Right.
Now they're working on mortgages. Mortgages is really big because it's a very high-ticket item. It impacts a lot of the economy, as we all know. I mean, as the economy goes, kind of mortgages go. And so we want to make sure that that's working well, and they have a big focus on mortgages today.
We have just a couple of minutes left in this talk, and I just want to ask you, when you look at people who don't have any credit, And one of the things that eCredible does, I think, so effectively is evaluate non-traditional forms of credit, stuff that 80% never even makes it onto your traditional credit report. Let's go over some of those things that you look at, and, well, not you personally, of course, but eCredible looks at, and why you think that that's a more effective way of measuring somebody's credit worthiness.
Well, certainly, you know, we like to say that eCredible is the rest of the story. And so today, when you pay your bills, 80%, if you're a normal person, you have debt, you have a car loan and a mortgage and credit cards, 80% of the bills you're paying today are not being reported to the National Credit Bureaus. And so that's an awful lot of expense that you're accountable for that you're not getting any credit for at all. And so we built a model that's different from a traditional credit bureau, where we look at your rent, your utilities, your insurance, your child care, all these other payments that you're making that are you're making on time. They are predictable. They're sizable. This is not $2 a month stuff. This is $500 a month stuff, so that we can put that into a credit rating model and actually predict your credit worthiness. And then we can share that with a potential lender who will use that as a way to determine the risk that they want to assign to you. Creditors always need to understand your risk profile. They're never going to lend you money if they can't assess your risk profile. And so when you don't have a traditional credit history, eCredible can help you prove you're credit worthy so that you can get access to those kind of financing options.
Now, federal law requires creditors to actually look at this stuff, but if you come in with a shoebox, I mean, the way my mother does her taxes, I mean, I love you, Mom, but really, there's no real effective way for them to say, well, it looks like you paid your rent on time, and it looks like you're sending money down to, you know, through Western Union every month. That looks good. I mean, there's no real effective measure for them.
No, there's not. And you can imagine you taking a shoebox full of canceled checks and invoices and rent and utility bills and presenting it to the person in a bank. They're just not going to have any idea what to do with that.
Right.
And they have no process to deal with that. And that's the beauty of eCredible, is that we actually take that very same information. We verify it. We put it into a real credit report with a real credit rating. You can present that to somebody at the bank or the credit union or the auto dealer or the new landlord or whatever the case might be. And it comes from a credit reporting agency. So now they know that it's legitimate, and they can use that in making a decision about you.
What would you say are some of the most, or a couple, just one or two of the more innovative things that are going on in credit right now? When you go look out there, what are you seeing?
Well, there's a couple things. First of all, there's all kinds of variable risk going on with credit cards today. I've seen a lot of companies now trying to understand, based upon your payment activity, them more rapidly adjusting your rates. Now, that tends to be the higher-end credit cards, not the lower-end credit cards, but that's kind of going on out there. And I think that helps people that are truly really good at paying their bills on time. For people that struggle, that carry a lot of balance on their credit cards, that's not going to work for them. But for the people that are a little bit more aggressive with that, that's going to work for them. In the mortgage space, nothing is really new right now. Rates are as low as they've been in like forever. And so you kind of wonder, how can a company even lending money around mortgages make money in the long term? There's no way that rates are going to stay this low forever. It's just not financially possible.
I don't know how they can even go much lower, and yet the Fed is saying they're holding rates, you know, at historic lows through 2014, and they're going to push them even lower. I mean, the federal government's going to have to start giving money to banks again in order to get rates any lower. I mean, there's a margin that has to come into play.
That's right.
And it's just kind of like, are you kidding me? Really? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, so I don't know if there's going to be any more innovation around that. There's, you know, there's some innovation trying to happen around reverse mortgages, but that gets some negative press from some people. There's still a lot of questions around that.
There's a lot of screw-ups going on with reverse mortgages. Yeah. That's a whole nut. We got to do that in a whole other show, because
okay.
Reverse mortgages, the way that they have their amortization schedule works, if you look at it, they're projecting 4% annual appreciation every year for their houses. And guess what?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just
not happening.
Steve Ely is Chief Executive Officer of eCredible. He's with us. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, just say a couple more words with Steve, and then we will move on to Greg McBride of Bankrate.com. I'm Elise Glink. You're listening to News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at ThinkGlink.com, and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show. We are live on Sundays, 11 to 1, here on News Talk WSB. We are talking about real estate and mortgages and credit, and doing a mid-year economic report live from the Hunton Hotel in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm glad you could join us today. Steve Ely is with me right now. He is the CEO of eCredible, a credit reporting agency based in Alpharetta that looks at non-traditional credit. So not the things that normally go in a FICO score, but basically everything else to help you establish credit. Good for people who don't have credit files and very thin credit files, or perfectly awful credit, thanks to what's happened with the foreclosure market. Steve, so during the break, you told me that you may have given out an inaccurate website address for the American Equity Foundation. What is their website?
Yeah, the correct address is aefnsp.org. AEF is American Equity Foundation. NSP stands for Neighborhood Stabilization Program. It's a federal program that helps communities that are trying to stabilize their community by minimizing foreclosures and having a lot of empty homes around. They're going to drag the values down of the entire community. They're trying to help people stay in those homes. So that's what American Equity Foundation is trying to do.
It's perfect. I think that there's going to be a lot of people in Georgia very interested in hearing more about that program. We will tweet that out a little bit later on today. And if you want to find out more about eCredible, just go to eCredible.com, eCredible.com. Steve, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Elise.
All right. Coming up, Greg McBride, a senior vice president and financial analyst with Bankrate.com. I think I have that right. Anyway, really smart guy, and he has a lot to say. We're going to talk to him in just a few moments. Stay tuned. I'm Elise Klink, and this is News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at ThinkGlink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Hey, welcome back to the Elise Klink Show live on Sundays here on News Talk WSB. We are at the Hutton Hotel in Nashville, Tennessee, where I'm hosting a panel discussion on the credit, current sort of mid-year trends of credit, real estate, what's going on in the mortgage market. And we've got some really interesting people here to talk to you about it today. So glad you were able to join us. Don't forget to go online. You can follow me on Twitter. That's where we tweet out phone numbers and all kinds of relevant information. At Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. Greg McBride joins me now. You've probably seen his name in print quite a lot. He's a vice president and senior financial analyst over at Bankrate.com. And, you know, we recommend Bankrate all the time if you're looking to check out different mortgage rates or CD rates or auto loan rates. Right, Greg? There's all kinds of stuff that we can look there.
Anything having to do with personal finance, we have it.
And they also have wonderful personal finance information as well. So, Greg, you've got... You're a chartered financial analyst, right? So you've got really strong credentials for personal finance, and you've been talking about this stuff for a long time. Let's talk a little bit about mortgages and kind of the redefault rates. It's interesting. We're seeing some redefaults on loan mods. People who have applied for HARP, maybe they get approved, maybe they don't. Tell us, from where you sit, what do you think's going on here?
Well, we've got two different programs. One is geared for modifications, another one geared for refinancing. And although the modification program was the one that got the initial push, it's actually the HARP program, which is geared for refinancing, that's really what's the difference maker at this point in time.
You think it's working?
I think it is. It's kicked into higher gear, certainly here in 2012, because of some long overdue and much needed enhancements to the program. There are people that are deeply upside down all over the country that previously were ineligible that now are eligible. There originally had been a cap of 105%.
Yeah, which is like nothing.
Which is like nothing.
Right.
And then not long after the program was initially rolled out in 2009, they realized that was like nothing, so they bumped it up to 125%, which was a baby step in the right direction, but not nearly enough to help people in the hardest hit markets like Florida and California and Arizona and Nevada.
The whole state of Michigan and Georgia.
Yeah, and so what they've finally done, better late than never, they announced it late last year and it went into effect here in the first quarter of this year, is they have removed that cap altogether. So now it doesn't matter how much more you owe on that property to what it's currently worth. You are eligible to refinance under this government refinancing program, HARP, as long as your loan is owned or guaranteed by Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. So that brings a lot more people into this refinancing game, and the timing is very fortuitous because mortgage rates continue to hit and reset record lows. So you've got this environment of record low mortgage rates and a whole lot more people now eligible to refinance.
So we talk about it all the time on the show about HARP and HARP 2.0 and 3.0, whatever, wherever we are with the 3.0s. And it's really interesting that some people don't understand how they're eligible or not eligible. And people who do with some Fannie and Freddie loans are getting turned down. I think they're not understanding that it's really at the bank's discretion still. So the government says you're eligible. I say you're eligible. You say you're eligible. And they go to their bank, and their bank's like, nah, not today. Let's talk about that. What are some of these reasons that some people are just ruled out of the pot?
Not every bank or lender is participating in the HARP refinancing, particularly for those higher loan-to-value consumers. They may still do HARP refinances, but they're sticking at the lower loan-to-value ratios.
What is the benefit to them or not benefit?
Lenders are deathly afraid of what's known as buyback risk, and that is the risk that something's not documented in the loan file, an I's not dotted, a T's not crossed, and if that loan later defaults, Fannie or Freddie comes back to the lender and says, you made a mistake. Now you got to buy this back.
Okay, but wait. They already own the loan. They already own. It's their loan. They still have it, and there's still a risk. So isn't it less of a risk if somebody's saving $200 a month on their mortgage payment that they're going to default?
That's why we need to get people refinanced. But that's a whole different ball of wax than this buyback risk, which is another one of these enhancements to the HARP program that's gone into effect this year, removing one of the key obstacles. And so a lot of lenders may still be focusing on their own loans because they're like, hey, we know this customer. We feel there's a lot less buyback risk because of the fact that we did the original file on this customer and they've made their payments on time for 3 or 4 years, but they're not going to take on new customers. So getting back to your original question about why are people being stonewalled whenever they call their lender may not be participating at all, or they may only be participating up to a certain loan to value, or they may only offer this to their existing customers. So the takeaway here is shop around. As you would with any other loan, you got to shop around. Don't stop with that first phone call.
Well, you know, it's funny that you say shop around. Of course, we say that all the time on this show. Many of my listeners, even over the last couple of weeks, have said, oh, I didn't know you could shop around with HARP. I thought we just had to go to our lender, and if they said no, they said no. Not the case.
Very common misconception. And, you know, again, I think that as more lenders get into the program and start offering the program, I think that idea of shopping around will become more ingrained in borrowers. But I think you're right. It's a very common misperception that people have. Right now they think they can only go to their current lender when, in fact, they can shop around, and the need to do so just because of the fact that not every lender is participating.
So now I'm thinking about, you know, the other kinds of things that people don't shop around for, right? So loan modifications, you do need to go to your own lender. But there are other kinds of things that people don't shop around for, and they should, like credit card loans and auto loans. And we talked earlier, sort of off the air, about this whole refinancing of auto loans. It's like a burgeoning industry. You might have had a 15% loan. Now you might be able to refinance it for 6 or 7%.
At record low interest rates are not confined to just mortgages. We're seeing it across the spectrum on a variety of products, certainly on the auto loans. I think that's the other sort of well-kept secret. We see a lot of new and used car loan rates at 3%, some even below. And you talk about why are people borrowing? Well, when you factor in the rate of inflation, it's almost like borrowing for free. So even people that have the money to pay cash for the car aren't, because it's cheaper for them to borrow the money.
So all these super low interest rates are so great, except for the fact that there are all these unforgotten casualties. I mean, people who are really depending on this. I think about my mom or Sam's dad, anybody who's a senior who has money in the bank and is looking forward to getting some rate of return on their interest. Who else is dying from this?
Well, I mean, I think that's the poster child right there. Retirees, anybody dependent upon interest income. Not only have they had to endure this five-year-long environment of falling and now record low interest rates, but it's going to persist for a few more years because the Fed is pledging to keep short-term interest rates on hold until late 2014, and who knows, it could actually extend longer than that. Not to mention, interest rates are so low that it's going to take a few years of them raising rates before we get back to respectable levels. So what you've got is a situation where a lot of retirees, they've had their interest income decimated by this environment of low interest rates. It cuts their buying power. Healthcare costs are still rising. It's putting a squeeze on that. And what it really amounts to is a direct wealth transfer from savers people that have accumulated assets, they've paid off their mortgages, but now their interest income on their savings has been cut so dramatically, and it's a wealth transfer from them to those that are deeply indebted, the people that are benefiting from this environment of low rates who are now able to refinance or get loan modifications as a result.
But all these people aren't spending either, so this is our economy is taking a huge hit from this category of consumers as well, right? Because seniors spend money.
Well, the one commonality we see across everybody is this, that there's a lack of demand. Everybody's nervous. Really, it harkens back to the financial crisis in 08. Everybody's kind of waiting for that other shoe to drop. And it's like if you've ever been hit from behind at a red light, from that point forward, you're always looking in your rearview mirror wondering if the guy behind you is going to stop. And so it's the same sort of thing now. People are really kind of wondering whether it's Europe or the fiscal cliff or slowing growth in overseas markets. Gee, is that going to be the thing that tips us over the edge economically? And when people have those kind of concerns, it doesn't inspire the type of confidence that we need for people to go out and spend.
Are we going into another recession?
No, I don't think so, but I think we're going to flirt with it. We've certainly got our hands on our hands another summer swoon, just like we've had each of the last 2 years.
Yeah.
The difference, I would say, is that each year the highs get higher and the lows get higher. In other words, the economy's on stronger footing today than it was 12 months ago. It was on stronger footing 12 months ago than it was 24 months ago. So we've got ourselves another summer swoon. There's no denying that. I think it'll be enough to avoid recession, but we've got a lot of
things
we have to navigate.
Slowing. Wait, China's slowing. They're talking about a hard landing. Europe's in recession, going into much deeper recession. You know, Latin America still seems sort of strong, but not everywhere. This is something we didn't actually have a year ago or 2 years ago. So I kind of look at it and I think, wow, yeah, I agree with you. We are seeing a little bit better stuff here in the U.S. Definitely the highs are higher and the lows are higher. And yet, so much of what happens to us is tied to Europe, tied to China. How is that going to affect things?
Well, if we look at sort of the export numbers that just came out this week, they were actually much better than expected. So, you know, this concern that, oh, well, with Europe in recession, with China slowing, it's really going to hit us. Our exports are going to really take it on the chin. Knock on wood, so far we're not seeing that.
But that's delayed, but that's a delayed number,
it
right?
Is a
that's
delay.
Not a sort of current, here's what's happening in July
now,
issue.
The other thing is, you look at what's going on right now, it sounds scary. But let's rewind the clock. Let's go back 11 or 12 months ago. Here's where we were then. We had the debt ceiling debacle, the debt rating downgrade, a barrage of poor economic data, and a stock market correction, all within a six-week period of time.
Yep.
And during that six-week period of time, Bankrate.com polled American consumers and found 40% of them said they had cut back on their spending within that 60-day window, specifically because of bad news on the economy and the stock market. Now, that's how recessions are made of, and we've managed to pull out of the nosedive and avoid it. So as scary as things seem now, I would argue they were a lot scarier this time last year. We managed to navigate our way around a recession at that point.
That's very true. Now we're in a presidential election cycle, and everything in real estate slows down, right? The closer you get 6 months out, as you month by month march towards real estate, march toward the election, people get very nervous about making a really big purchase. Are you guys starting to see that yet or not?
Yeah, I think you're starting to see that here. There's a lot of nervousness about the fiscal cliff, and we're going to hear a lot more about this in the months to come. The fact is, if Congress does nothing, that's what Congress seems to do best, is nothing.
They are so good at it.
If they do nothing, not only do tax rates go up for everyone, because the 10% federal income tax bracket goes away completely, but you also have major spending cuts that kick in. And
means millions of layoffs.
You put the two of those together, it takes a big hit or puts a big dent in our economic output, and we could very well likely be looking at a recession in 6 months if that's not resolved. So that nervousness is only going to grow if nothing's accomplished.
Yeah, and I know there's a lot of stuff going on with the health care law. I mean, you know, we did see what the Supreme Court said, but now you're hearing states say, we don't care what the Supreme Court says, we're not going to do what we're supposed to be doing, and we're not going to set up the exchanges, and we're not going to fund an increased Medicaid. There are no penalties now. We don't care.
The whole healthcare topic just gives me a headache.
It's just going to cost more. It's really the bottom line, right?
That's really what it's going to boil down to.
Oh, my gosh. What else do you see out there when you look?
A lot of good opportunities out there now for the people that have good credit, the people that are diligent with their finances. They've kept their debt burdens low. They have their emergency savings accumulated. They're looking for opportunities to either to invest or borrow on the cheap. See a lot of opportunities there. A lot of opportunities for consumers to have strong credit, particularly with reward credit cards. A lot of great introductory offers out there.
And
it's a good opportunity while tax rates are still low. to convert some of those traditional IRA balances into a Roth IRA. You can do that now regardless of your household income. Something to think about now while tax rates are low. Pay the tax man now before those tax rates go up in later years.
Oh, my God. There's so many things to think about. We're talking to Greg McBride. He is a senior financial analyst and vice president with Bankrate.com, providing all kinds of really interesting personal finance advice, and I'm sure you've seen his information before. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, I have one more question for you, Greg, so get ready. And we are also going to talk with Doug Walker of Churchill Mortgage about what he is seeing in the marketplace right now. Churchill is actually based in Nashville, which is where we are talking to you from today here at the Hutton Hotel. I'm Elise Kling. Stay tuned. I'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at faithglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back. I'm Elise Glink. You're listening to The Elise Glink Show live on Sundays here on News Talk WSB. Today, live from the Hutton Hotel in Nashville, Tennessee, which is a great spot if you get a chance to stop by. It's a wonderful hotel. I'm here this week. We're doing a panel on the economy, sort of a mid-year look at where we are, how things are going, to help put into context for you what we're seeing out there so that you can start to make truly, truly smart decisions for yourself and for your family. With me is Greg McBride. He's Vice President and Senior Financial Analyst with Bankrate. So, Greg, my last question for you is, how do you feel that Americans are about their own financial security right now? Do Americans feel secure or not?
A lot of that really depends on who you ask. And in particular, we see big differentiations between those that have incomes of $75,000 a year or more. They feel their financial security is improving, consistently getting better relative to those that have incomes less. They don't feel that way. Big departure there. Age 50, also a big cutoff. Whenever we look at it by age, those over age 50 do not have confidence with regard to their job security, their savings, their net worth. Whereas those under age 50, they're feeling a little more confident. They feel like they're moving the needle slowly, bit by bit. Finally, educational attainment, big break point there. The unemployment rate for those that have a college degree is just 4%.
Pretty good.
It's near 8.5% for those that have a high school diploma, and it's over 12% for those that don't have a high school diploma. So the educational attainment, we see a big departure there in terms of how people feel.
Sounds good. I guess I'm glad I just turned 48. I'm in the still optimistic category. Greg McBride, thanks so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Elise.
When we come back, we're going to talk with Doug Walker of Churchill Mortgage. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more on News Talk WSB.
It's live, expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glink is on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Hey, welcome back to the Elise Glink Show. We're live on Sundays 11 to 1 here on News Talk WSB. Today we're taking a mid-year look at the economy, particularly in the areas of credit and mortgages and personal finance. I've had a number of really interesting guests already with me on the show, and right now we have Doug Walker. He's Vice President of Sales and Marketing for Churchill Mortgage Corporation. So if you listen to Dave Ramsey, you know that Dave really likes Churchill Mortgage. I think they must be neighbors here in Nashville. We're in Nashville broadcasting today from the Hutton Hotel. But I think there must be another reason as well. And the other reason is that you don't need to have a credit score to get a loan with Churchill Mortgage. Churchill Mortgage is one of those lenders that actually figured out somewhere along the way that just because you don't have a FICO score doesn't mean that you don't have good credit. So Doug joins me now. Doug, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So you guys, Churchill Mortgage has been in business for a long time. You're lending VA, FHA, USDA mortgages in 23 states, approaching about $1 billion in loans. Tell me a little bit about your area of expertise. I think it's sort of in the area of first-time buyers, right?
Yeah, we really like to focus on first-time home buyers, especially on the information and resources part of what first-time home buyers really need to be prepared for their buying their first home or just getting ready for that decision.
And what is it that you're seeing going on right now with first-time homebuyers? Because this is such a coveted group. You know, there's mortgage lenders across the country would like nothing better than if a million first wannabe first-time buyers jumped off the fence and went, wow, lowest mortgage interest rates in history, I should go buy a house. And yet they're not exactly.
Yeah, I mean, ever since 2007 when we had the big liquidity crisis or credit crunch or whatever moniker that somebody wants to put on it, when everything kind of froze up in the markets, from that point on, people seemed to be highly motivated by fear, and mostly they were frozen by fear. There's fear in the economy. Am I going to have a job? Am I going to find a job? A lot of first-time home buyers usually start the process around age 25 or so, and they're going to start thinking about buying a home. But that stops if you don't think you're going to have a job, if you think that there's job instability. And a lot of those factors have kept people from really making the move, making that forward move that they normally would have in a pre-2007 sort of economy.
It's interesting when you look at first-time homebuyers today, and they are frozen. They're so stuck. And, you know, again, I think they're hearing that, and rightfully so, that many lenders are simply not opening up their arms quite the way that they were. There's just a, when it comes to residential lending, as we've heard on the show and we heard in the panel this week, people are, or I should say lenders are really trying to get the very best people they can, mm-hmm. which means, of course, if you want to get a loan, it helps if you don't need a loan.
Right.
So when you see people coming through the door today, are they more qualified than they used to be, less qualified? How have you changed your lending standards?
We're a mortgage banker, which we don't set our lending guidelines. We're pretty much bound to the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and with other investors that we sell to on the secondary market. So we have that pool of guidelines to work off of, which is an ever-changing environment.
I'm sure.
It seems that every week they change some guidelines somewhere, and it throws our underwriters into a tizzy because they're trying to readjust. Is that person still qualified, or will they be qualified next month? So that's just some of the struggles that we face in the lending environment. The thing that we see for the people that come in is I haven't seen a big change in the type of customers that we've had. I've been at Churchill for 15 years and started as a loan officer. And so I stay very close to our lending people, our managers and the loan officers themselves. Our focus has always been when people come in to figure out where are they at and how can we help them. It wasn't so much, can you do a loan now? Can I close your loan? Because that's a sales mindset. We like to be in a more of an advisory mindset. And when you're in an advisory mindset, what Dave Ramsey calls us, we have the heart of a teacher is what his phrase was. And I love that because that really does define the fact that we want to help people. So we'll help people if they come in and they don't qualify for a loan. I don't want anybody to leave us and not have some sort of tool in their hands that helps them either get prepared for the home, or if they have a current home, how do they pay that off quicker? How do they pay it off faster? So we've worked real hard, probably for the last 10 years in particular, on tools and resources for every stage of the process, whether it be how to put yourself in position with a buying your first home free report that we have, to someone that might have an early payoff calculator, to whether or not we want to move forward with a loan, and after closing, we keep them in touch with reports and things that will help them understand where is their current mortgage to what's in the market now. Are there any opportunities?
So when you are looking at sort of people today and this teaching that you're doing, I know one thing that keeps coming up over and over again is this idea that you need 20% down on your house. That was 20 years ago when I started writing, and I'm dating myself here, but when I started writing about real estate, it was about 20% down. You know, the 80s were all about 20% down. And frankly, when you had mortgage interest rates at 18, 19%, people were like, okay, the bigger the down payment, the less I have to pay on these interest rates. But then we went into this whole field of like sort of creative credit where you got all the way down to 0%. Now people are feeling like they have to come up with 20% again. What are you seeing and what are you guys doing?
Well, I think the first thing would be is to try and figure out where is that message coming from. who is saying you need 20% down? And what we, I guess it was about, it was about 3 years ago or so, I started hearing on the morning network shows, not to name any, but they would have expert guests on who were telling you you needed 20% down in this market now. This is post-2007 crash.
Mm-hmm.
And they kept harping about, yeah, you're going to need 20% down in perfect credit. You're going to need 20% down in perfect credit. And it just about drove me crazy because I was trying to figure out where they were getting that information. And it started to dawn on me, wait a minute, they're in New York, and they're in Los Angeles, and that's where these people were based out of.
Right.
These are usually jumbo markets
mm-hmm.
with a jumbo loan, which is over the conforming loan limit. So you would need 20% down if you had a jumbo loan, but the majority of Americans didn't need 20% down. There's tons of different programs out there that are zero down. VA still is out there zero down. You've got bond programs that are pretty well zero down. You've got the USDA Rural Housing that's a zero-down program as well.
Right, but one thing we have seen is even with these super low down payment loans, and they're out there, we've seen higher rates of default. We've seen, you know, those 80-20 loans where you put up were 100% payments. I mean, those were defaulting like crazy. They got modified. They were redefaulting. You are also seeing increased levels of PMI. Private mortgage insurance mm-hmm. got much more expensive. Even FHA had to raise the down payment, the minimum down payment, to 3.5%, and then they raised their fees as well. So, although some of those have come back. So I think there was certainly a change that was underfoot, but I agree with you when you've got experts on the West and East Coast, they have no idea what goes on in the middle of the country. One area that I did see is that in rental properties, many lenders, even in the middle of the country, went from the 10 homes, 10 loans, down to 4, even though Fannie and Freddie were taking up to 10 mortgages. They also were looking at 30 to 35% down in equity.
Yes.
I don't know that that's changed. Are you seeing a change in those loans yet?
We see, luckily because we deal with multiple lenders and use their guidelines, we're able to kind of keep looking and finding, is there someone that's, you know, relaxing some of those guideline requirements? Because you always have a pendulum shift whenever things are going crazy. People go to the extreme, and then you'll have things like 20% down and or like you're saying, 35% down for a rental property, investment property. We've seen a lot of those come back, but not with all lenders. A lot of, you know, some of the big names that you hear in the news as far as lenders go and banks go, usually they're the ones that are they're moving a little slower. They're moving a little more cautiously. And plus, they've incurred some major losses over the last few years. So they're going to move slower. They're being watched by regulators pretty tight. So they're watching their credit ratings. And so they don't want to bring on additional risk.
Right.
And we can all understand that.
Well, we've heard about the buyback risk. You know, they've
the buyback risk.
The biggest lenders have been forced to buy back just millions and millions of dollars of loans that were done poorly or done badly. And They are a little mortgage shy, I would have to say.
Oh, yes.
So from where you sit and the different surveys that you do, tell me a little bit about what's going on here. I know Nashville is your home base. You're in 23 states. What are you seeing in sort of the areas in which you lend in terms of home value trends, home buying trends? What are you seeing?
It is market to market. I mean, we lend here in Nashville, Tennessee, the state of Tennessee, and we see in Metro Nashville, we're seeing increases. We've seen increases in property values of, there's just a story that just came out in the Tennessean today, I believe it was, that home prices were increasing 7 to 16% in some markets over last year. Sales are up by the same number, 16% year over year. When you get out of Nashville, which is a little insulated, our economy is, most people think it's country music, but the economy is not based on country music
in Nashville. I think it's country music. I got off the airplane. There was a country music singer. Then I got into the outside part. There was another country music singer. I mean,
they're
not only based on country music?
Well, no, they're all from other parts of the country. They're out of work.
Yeah.
No. They're here. We love that. I was actually in the country music for several years when I first got out of college, but the thing here is insurance and health care. That is Nashville, and so we're insulated as an economy. We never take big swings up or down, it seems, so we're pretty level. We get outside of Nashville in some of our markets, you know, Georgia, for instance, in the Atlanta area, it's not recovering as quickly. You probably know a lot more about Atlanta than I do, but
it's awful. It's just awful, as I think all you can say about it.
It's got its challenges, that's for sure. But what's interesting, we found, I mean, normally people are seeing states like Florida, Nevada, California, and you're looking at these states and going, man, they have lost some major home value. And it depends on who you're talking to. If you owned a home and you bought it in 2005 to 2007, let's say, you probably experienced a lot of loss of equity. Switch that around and look at things now and look at first-time home buyers, and first-time home buyers are finding homes at super bargains. So once they get over the fears of making a bad decision or not knowing who to trust, is somebody going to direct them correctly to this first big expense that they're going to make, this investment? Once they get over that fear, they look and they see these historically low rates and houses are on sale. I mean, there's just no question about it. There are big bargains out there in a lot of different markets. Yeah. And it's if it ever were a buyer's market, it is now.
Yeah, we talk about this on the show all the time, that this is the best buying opportunity in your lifetime.
Yeah.
I think maybe even since the 40s and 50s when, you know, World War II had deflated things. Even from the 70s when we had the recession, 73, 74, you know, for sure when mortgage interest rates were in the 18% level in the early 80s, and here we are. And between super low mortgage prices and the home price depreciation, wow, if you've got any cash and credit, this is a time to call you for a loan, right? I'm talking to Doug Walker. He's Vice President of Sales and Marketing for Churchill Mortgage Corporation. They're based here in Nashville, in Tennessee, which is where we're talking to you from. We'll be back in just a moment to finish up with Doug. And then Trey Loughran from Equifax is going to join us to talk a little bit about his vision of credit around the world, not just what's going on here with credit, but how we're exporting credit almost like a commodity to places like Russia and China and Latin America. Very, very interesting stuff. So we'll get his perspective on credit coming up next. I'm Elise Glenn. Thanks for joining us today. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glenn Show. We are live on Sundays, 11 to 1, here on News Talk WSB. We are talking about real estate and mortgages and credit and doing a mid-year economic report live from the Hunton Hotel in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm glad you could join us today. Steve Ely is with me right now. He is the CEO of eCredible, a credit reporting agency based in Alpharetta that looks at non-traditional credit. So not the things that normally go in a FICO score, but basically everything else to help you establish credit. Good for people who don't have credit files and very thin credit files or perfectly awful credit, thanks to what's happened with the foreclosure market. Steve, so during the break, you told me that you may have given out an inaccurate website address for the American Equity Foundation. What is their website?
Yeah, the correct address is aefnsp.org. AEF is American Equity Foundation. NSP stands for Neighborhood Stabilization Program. It's a federal program that helps communities that are trying to stabilize their community by minimizing foreclosures and having a lot of empty homes around. They're going to drag the values down of the entire community. They're trying to help people stay in those homes. So that's what American Equity Foundation is trying to do.
It's perfect. I think that there's going to be a lot of people in Georgia very interested in hearing more about that program. We will tweet that out a little bit later on today. And if you want to find out more about eCredible, just go to eCredible.com, eCredible.com. Steve, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Elise.
All right. Coming up, Greg McBride, a senior vice president and financial analyst with Bankrate.com. I think I have that right. Anyway, really smart guy, and he has a lot to say. We're going to talk to him in just a few moments. Stay tuned. I'm Elise Glenn, and this is News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Hey, welcome back to the Elise Glink Show. We're live on Sundays here on News Talk WSB. Today I'm broadcasting live from the Hutton Hotel in Nashville, Tennessee. I've been here this week to do a panel on credit and the economy, where we are today. We're calling it a mid-year sort of economic forecast, and some of the panel experts have been with me today to talk about their perspective on what's going on with the economy and what you can expect. What we're trying to do is give you some context so that you understand exactly where we are and how your economy, your own personal economies, fit into the grand big picture. Don't forget, you can always follow me on my Twitter account. It's at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. We're tweeting out relevant bits of information and phone numbers as well. You'll want to be sure to follow us there and on Facebook. And then don't forget to go to thinkglink.com, sign up for the free weekly newsletter, and then follow us also at the Equifax Finance blog, where we have all that great information on the five pillars of personal finance. All right, Trey Loughran joins me now. He's the president of Personal Information Solutions at Equifax. He's been a guest on the show before. Trey, welcome back.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So it's great that you've been, you're going to be on this panel this week, because I think that when it comes to personal credit, there's just so much changing in the marketplace. Credit matters so much more than it ever has before. It matters to the insurance rates you get. It matters to the investments that you make, the mortgages that you pay, the interest rates. And so understanding that and monitoring our personal credit, I find, is just, it's completely completely mystifying to so many Americans, and yet here we are with something you really need to understand. So this week, Equifax released its major credit trends report. When you looked at the report, what did you see in, with some of the current trends going on right now?
Well, Elise, one thing that I think is stands out and is a consistent trend is that we are seeing signs of optimism around the credit economy with the with consumers. There are a number of things that we can point to that would say that that credit is starting to open up, that the consumer balance sheet is starting to improve. So, for example, let's look at the overall consumer debt. It continues to trend downward. It's down 11% from the peak of where it was at the height of the recession. That's about $1.4 trillion that consumers have freed up from debt. So that's a very encouraging sign. Households are delevering, and we're seeing that helping consumers as they want to go out and look for new purchases. Interestingly, for the purposes of Nashville, since we're sitting here in Nashville today, Nashville's only down 4% from the peak, and the difference there really is home finance, because home finance nationally is down about 13%, and Nashville's only down about 4%. So I don't know if that's good news or bad news, because it may be good news meaning that there weren't a lot of defaults in Nashville, or it may be bad news meaning there's still things to be worked out here. I'm not sure.
I think it means that things are on an upswing. So we just had, as the last guest on the show, Doug Walker from Churchill Mortgage, which is based in Nashville, and Doug was telling us that he thinks things are on a tear here in Nashville, that he is seeing some real optimism, and the numbers are up like 16% from last year. So you could see it start to make a dent where more people are taking on mortgage debt, as opposed to being kind of a negative thing where it's, well, it's come down tremendously. So maybe that's the discrepancy. But around the country, you are seeing the deleveraging continue, and I think people think the shedding of debt, you know, has always been a good thing, and hopefully it is. What other credit trends, or what does it say in the credit trends report?
Well, it's interesting about what you were saying about what Churchill Mortgage was saying about the trends here about it loosening up really for mortgage lending in Nashville. Credit overall is starting to loosen up, so that's another trend. So as consumers are improving their balance sheet, they're starting to loosen up a little bit. But it's interesting, there was a great analogy. I was speaking to our economist earlier this week, and she had a great analogy. She said, okay, so think about the tightening of credit as when you tighten a bolt on a nut. And you, first of all, you tighten it with your finger, and then you get a wrench and you tighten it a little bit more, and then you get a bigger wrench and you put your feet up against the wall and you pull it really, really tight, right?
Yeah.
Well, the unloosening of credit is just starting to loosen it from being that tight. So that's a good way to start thinking about how much it's loosening up. But again, another statistic, credit, new originations of credit year to date in the United States is up from the trough about $60 billion. So that's a very positive thing as well. That's up about 30% from the trough. compared to where it was in 2006, it's still down about $160 billion. So we are a long way from the bottom, but we are a long way from where it was. Now, no one really thinks it's going to go back to necessarily where it was in 2006. But what you are seeing is credit coming back. And interestingly, out of that $60 billion or so from the trough, 60% of that is auto lending and 40% is card. And virtually none is mortgage. Mortgage is really kind of flat. New mortgage originations, virtually flat. There's not a lot of new credit coming into the mortgage market right now. So again, in Nashville, if that's happening, that's a very positive sign because we're not seeing that in the economy. But auto lending is really helping to pull us out in terms of a, from a credit perspective. And an interesting point there is that today, the average car on the road is a little over 11 years old.
Oh, that's almost the age of my car.
Yeah, well, there you go. And sounds like you need a new one.
I'm average again.
Well, you need a new car.
Maybe.
But 10 years ago, that was 9 years old. So that's gone up every year. And every year of the last 10 years, it's been a new record. And what that means is people are extending the life of their cars. They're maintaining them more. But you would expect to start to see that, you know, and we are seeing that play out in auto sales.
Well, so it's good news for auto sales and not so good news for mortgages, as we know. So let's talk a little bit about some of the credit trends going on across the world. It's interesting. I feel that the United States is probably the most developed country when it comes to credit. What we do with it, credit scoring models, you know, how we're so, of course, that doesn't say much for what happened with credit scoring models 5 years ago, but I know that Equifax has been looking out into other parts of the country. FICO has been looking at Latin America. What's going on in other parts of the world with regard to credit, and are they developing models that are similar to what we have here?
Well, each area of the world is going to be a little different. Obviously, Western Europe is going to be different from Latin America. It's going to be different from the emerging markets. But let me talk a little bit about an area that I have some personal experience in. In my prior role at Equifax, my responsibility was to really to start our businesses in Russia and India. And those were the first two new markets we'd entered in many years. And so looking at the credit economy there, it is different. And the exciting thing about those markets that attracts us to them is the growth of the middle class. Because the middle class in both those markets is still somewhat nascent. And what we really want to expect to see is a growing middle class with significant purchasing power. And with that comes the expansion of credit. But in order to really effectively expand credit, you obviously need an effective credit information system. So we've been very active in both those countries. And when you think about what the opportunity is, I'm not going to put a dollar value on it, but let me kind of make a quick point. So if you look at mortgage balances as a percentage of GDP, in the United States, that's 66%. In Russia, it's 10%.
Wow, that's a big change.
In India, it's 4%. So now, obviously, the GDP, it's a very different demographic in those countries. But if you think about, well, what's the value of that going from 4 and 10% to 8 and 15%?
Sure.
Very significant. Another example, credit cards as a percentage of the population. The United States, not surprisingly, is, what would you think?
Credit cards as a percentage of the population? Well, I think every person probably has at least two or three.
There you go. Yeah, so it's 158.
I mean, I'm balancing it out. I've got
right.
at least 20 in my wallet.
Right.
It's a very fat wallet now.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you're probably a little high, but it's 158%, right? Mm-hmm. In Russia, it's 7%, and in India, it's 2%. So again, you're a long way from seeing any kind of penetration levels like we have here in the United States. But when you're talking about one country that it's, you know, 1.2 billion people, another country that's the biggest country in Europe at 140 million people, modest changes are opening up big avenues of credit.
And that's true for the Hispanic market in the United States as well. I know we, you know, at Equifax, you've just launched sort of your Hispanic. I guess it's Equifax.com/Espanol, right? And
yes.
Julie Stav, who's the well-known Hispanic broadcaster, is the face of that.
Yep.
He's a good friend of ours as well. So let's talk a little bit about that market, for example, because I know that with the coming presidential election, the Latino population is sort of being fought over, and yet perhaps they're underserved when it comes to banking and credit.
I think that's right. We... there are some similar analogies to what we discussed about some of these emerging markets we're looking at. We expect the Hispanic credit market to be one that emerges significantly over the next decade. I've seen statistics that say that the Hispanic community is going to represent something like 40% of all new households created over the next 10 years in the United States. And home ownership in particular is something that is a very big focus of that community. And so we would expect to see significant growth in mortgage in the Hispanic community, as well as other areas of credit. And the growth in purchasing power is going to obviously increase with the growth of the population, the Hispanic population in general. So we're very excited about that, about what we're doing there. We've really tried to create something in working with Julie that's really not simply just taking what we do today and translating into Spanish, but really trying to put content and information using a lot of video with Julie in it to help explain credit and demystify credit, as you mentioned earlier, as people are looking, particularly as new entrants to the credit market, are looking to enter that market.
What else, we just have a minute or two left. What else do you see happening out there? What's high on the list? I know you've got Family Plan, which you guys have just launched. Are you looking at identity theft as becoming an even bigger problem?
We are. I think when you think about where we are, this direct consumer business of Equifax, historically we've been very focused on credit and identity. And we've really merged those two things together because we think they're two sides of the same coin, and you really need to think about one if you're thinking about the other. Over time, our goal is really to give customers the confidence and control to be their financial best. So one of the missions of Equifax is really to help our customers be better about working with their customers through data and analytics. And what we'll be doing is trying to bring in other data sources that Equifax has to help consumers be able to understand their own financial position better, and really trying to move more away from just providing information and providing insight about that information.
Insight is really where it's at, that's for sure. Are you seeing people respond to the whole idea of child identity theft? I mean, I've written so much about it, and I know we've been covering it on the Equifax Finance blog. But are you guys seeing more interest in it from sort of Equifax's perspective?
We are. We've seen very good adoption of the Family Plan, which is our product right now the only product right now that has child identity monitoring. And we've seen a lot of interest from various entities around the country asking about identity theft and looking for solutions for identity theft. So we're going to continue to look at developing additional ways to provide parents with opportunity to monitor their children's credit.
All right. We've been talking with Trey Loughran. He is president of Personal Information Solutions at Equifax. You can find him at Equifax.com, or I guess you can find all the other information that they have. We're going to talk a little bit more about the Equifax credit trends. When I come back, I'll run a couple of things down for you. I'm Elise Glenk. You're listening to The Elise Glenk Show on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at ThinkGlenk.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Hey, welcome back. It's The Elise Glenk Show on News Talk WSB. I've got Trey Loughran here. He's president of Personal Information Solutions at Equifax. So, Trey, I was looking at the Equifax credit report that came out this week, and really, we've talked about it earlier. It looks like, really, people, the deleveraging is going on, right? Bad debt is getting shed, but there is some growth, some new growth, mostly in automotive, but some other credit card as well, so that's good news. You know, what do you think? I mean, who's going to lead us really out of this? Because it's not quite strong enough where you could say we're on a roll yet.
Right. I think it's a great question, and I wish I had the answer. But what I'll say is that I do think that as we're looking at the consumer household balance sheet getting stronger, I do think that we're going to have to be looking to the consumer to lead us out of the recession. And consumer spending has been improving, but probably not at the rate people would like to see. But when you look at consumer spending relative to government spending or business spending, ultimately, we're going to have to see the consumer spending step up and consumer confidence help drive us out of the recession. And it still remains to be seen how confident consumers are going to be given the challenges of unemployment, of continued challenges of housing prices and the looming issues in Europe.
And not to mention the presidential election and the fiscal cliff.
Absolutely.
Just in case everybody thinks we're out of the woods.
But other than that, it's all simple.
Other than that, it's all good. Trey Loughran, president of Personal Information Solutions at Equifax, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Elise.
All right, I'm Elise Klink. The music's starting. That means our time is up, and I've got to run, but I'll be back next week with another show at 11 o'clock. Please stay tuned to News Talk WSB. Have a great week.
AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.